No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Si conoce a alguien que vive de forma ilegal en Estados Unidos, pronto lo volverá a ver, porque volverá a casa. Me llamo Kristi Noem, soy la Secretaria de Seguridad Nacional de Estados Unidos. Puede evitar problemas descargándose la app CBP Home y deportándose de forma segura. Recibirá ayuda económica, un vuelo gratis y la posibilidad de volver de forma legal. Si no lo hace, lo encontraremos, multaremos y echaremos a la fuerza. Bajo el fuerte liderazgo del presidente Trump, nuestras leyes se cumplen y nuestra frontera es segura.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome, Red Sox fans. Here are the bastards of Boston baseball.
Welcome, everyone. The bastards are back for this Monday edition of the podcast. We are part of the Minute Media Podcast Network. The Red Sox wrapped up a three-game opening series with the Yankees, dropping the series 2-1. They are tied for the bottom. I'm not gonna lie, I didn't check the bottom of the standings.
Third.
Okay, there's Job coming in clutch. The only undefeated team this weekend, the Tampa Bay Rays, swept the Orioles. So standings are meaningless for this opening set. Just a quick disclaimer for any first-time listeners, and there might be several of you coming into your first season with us. This is not a homer podcast. We call it how we see it. When the Red Sox are dominating, we will celebrate that. When they are getting destroyed, we will be critical and at times savagely blunt. If you are easily offended, press the stop button immediately. But for those who embrace it, let's get rolling. I am Terry Cushman coming to you from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine. You can find me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. You can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Joining us tonight from the nation's capital by way of Newport, Rhode Island, Job Goddard. Job, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm wrapping up what I like to call a sports bender here. For the listeners, if my voice sounds a little off, I was at the Nats game on Friday. I drove up to New York for the game, Red Sox-Yankees on Saturday. Drove back Saturday night, and today was at the Bruins-Capitals game. Couldn't be much better, except Boston teams went 0-2 in games that I attended this week, so that was a little tough. Terry, I'm not going to lie, hearing by way of Lewis in Maine, but not you being in Maine, that didn't sound right. I was waiting for you to say you were in Maine. Myrtle Beach sounds good. I might have to head down there for a visit.
Myrtle Beach. I'm actually just outside of Myrtle, but I just figured I'd go with Myrtle because most people know where that is. And it's actually, I'm saying Windham, Maine now because that is where I'm from. Lewiston is the poop hole capital of Maine, and I only live there for work. So, but glad to be no longer a resident and down in a much warmer climate as well. Also joining us tonight from the city of Providence, Rhode Island, I think this is his third season with the Bastards of Boston. Charlie Smith, how are you?
I'm good, man. I forget what season it is, man. It's been fun just the same. For those that are wanting to send me love, it's Smith_MLB. I learned a lot today. One, it does sound weird to hear you not say Lewiston, Maine. Job shouldn't be allowed to go watch Boston sports teams live. We always lose. In fact, we lost pretty ugly the game that we went to. It was a playoff game. I think it was game four. Actually, now that I think about it, it was game four. Game five was ugly too, but game four was the one that we went to. It sounds different. It's like, you know, seeing Michael Chavis's name with a grand slam, not next to the Boston Red Sox. You know, it just looks weird. It looks dumb. He should still be here, but, you know, what do I know? He's just hitting 500. No big deal.
Charlie,
I'm happy we won tonight. I'm happy we won tonight.
I was about to say, Charlie's the resident Chavis guy on
like
the crew.
Chavis, man.
I like him personally and rooted for him, but, you know, it just didn't work out. Bobby got hot in that second half, so
Bobby won us tonight's game.
He did. He absolutely did. And that was, what, the sixth inning? So there was, like, way too long to go after that. There was Stanton at least two more times, and so we'll get into that. So for the audience, this is our first regular season show. We are the early week crew. Jason and Andrew will be the midweek crew for when the Detroit series wraps. So we'll have this alignment for the first half, and then we'll play some musical hosts and kind of shuffle things up in the second half to kind of mix the chemistry up. But this is what you can expect in the early part of the week. Coming out on tomorrow's episode will be Hot Take Tuesday. We're going to rotate that out every other week with another format. Charlie will be the primary host for that one. And so that's about what you can expect, but we are going to have four shows a week. So we hope you enjoy it. Two of them will be roughly 30 minutes, and we're going to try to keep the series shows like the one we're doing tonight under 60. No promises, though, but it's always the goal. So the Red Sox did salvage the series tonight. Pins and needles the whole time. Kind of, I was thinking we were going to blow it. I mean, we led early in the other two games. And it's nice to at least get a win in the opening series. What'd you guys think about the Diekman move late? Because I did not like that at all. In the war room, we were hoping that Robles might come out for another batter or two. And it ended up being Diekman. Luckily, it worked out. But, whew. It worked out all right.
It really worked out.
It shows us what we know. No, I would have gone with a righty arm as well. But to be completely honest, no one in this bullpen has screwed up to this point, right? And we're 3 days in. If you check Twitter, especially, you know, with some of the more negative Red Sox fans out there who tend to be followers of this podcast, because we are not homers and we're not going to say they're great, the bullpen has been nails. Garrett Whitlock gave up a solo shot. In any other instance, you take that. And the rest of the bullpen, I mean, it's not been fun to watch, right? It's not like watching Koji, but they've been pretty good. So, especially today when Tanner Houck gave us the most stressful three innings to start a series that I can remember, the bullpen bailed him out. And that'll probably last about 2 weeks before everybody's either hurt or exhausted if the starters don't pick it up. But this one's on the offense. We could have won 2 out of 3. The offense was 2 for 20 in scoring position in the first two, with runners in scoring position in the first two games. Not good enough, simply.
Yeah, and the bullpen did not have a good spring. Very few of those guys, maybe with the exception of one or two, actually pitched well. So it was kind of a breath of fresh air to see them perform well against a very murderous lineup that the Yankees are trotting out there. But Charlie, what are your thoughts on how the series wrapped?
So how it wrapped, much better than how it started, because actually, it started kind of interesting because the main issue that I had with this one was major concerns with players that I would expect to have done something. But when Diekman came out in the ninth, I was like, you know what? What's the worst that could happen? We lose again? We already lost the first two. So I wasn't completely against it, only because how else are we going to get to see these guys in big opportunities? This is an opportunity for Diekman, a newly signed guy who signed, I think his was a 2-year, $8 million. I'm not mistaken.
Correct, with an option, I think, team option for a third year.
So let's just get his feet wet. You're going to have to face this team 18, 16 times a year. We might as well see what you can do in pressure situations. You got a one-run lead, ninth inning, and you're facing two bangers for New York. And the other guy can also swat it out. Strikes out Judge, strikes out Stanton. Albeit Stanton sucks as far as that strike zone. He just was fishing. Good God, that pitch was awful. Exactly one baseball player would have swung at that pitch, and he did. And the third one is just Joey Gallo, who strikes out about 106% of the time. So it's I was happy. The Judge at-bat was huge for me. That was absolutely huge. I'm happy with the way it ended, but God, we got some things we got to tweak.
Diekman striking out the side was definitely huge. Stanton murdered us all series, went deep in each of the first two games. And I think he was like 3-for-3, 4-for-4, something like that tonight before finally striking out against Diekman. So it was good that we ultimately salvaged it. So we'll get into the scores here. Game one. Nathan Eovaldi on the mound. Red Sox lose that one 6-5. Close game. Game two, Nick Pivetta getting the start. Red Sox drop that one 4-2. And then tonight get the win in the finale 4-3. Not a ton of scoring here outside of maybe the six that the Yankees put up in the first game. So where the Red Sox drop the series, the main segment this week is going to be the weekend shit list. So we promise we won't get any more vulgar than that on the show, but still not the series we were hoping for. So, Charlie, go ahead. What's who's number one on the shit list this week?
For me, it's Kike Hernandez. After starting off the night, after starting off the year with a 4-pitch walk, he grounded to 2 double plays, grounded out again, struck out. Following game, not much different, is just a ground out machine and strikeout machine. And also, I mean, I think Job's going to talk about it too. I really don't want to see him get mic'd up ever again, because he's a magnet when he's mic'd up. He had multiple balls go his way. But after 3 games in the series, I want to say he's 0 for 13 with no hits, a couple of walks, that's it. And that's incredibly alarming. I expect that from Jackie Bradley Jr. I expect that from maybe like Arroyo or Vasquez. Vasquez is on the board. He's got a hit. You cannot have your leadoff hitter go 0 for 13 in a series. I'm sorry. You just can't. That is my number one yikes so far.
He was definitely a mess, and 5 strikeouts. That's pretty bad out of your leadoff hitter. Of his 13 at-bats, 5 were strikeouts. Job, thoughts on Kike?
Well, he simply has to be better. It's series one. We had a short spring training. Guys don't necessarily have their timing down. A lot of the pitches he struck out on were breaking balls. Very clearly, he needs to get his timing down a little bit better. At least he was taking pitches. I'd like to see that. Wasn't striking out on 3 pitches, and he wasn't going down looking. He seems to have some command of the zone. He just doesn't have his timing down. I'm not concerned, but if he goes 2-for-13, we probably win one more game in this series. So he's definitely on the shit list for this one, but I wouldn't expect that this problem continues. It's going to just be a recurring theme. We're going to talk about it for the next week or so. Guys still have to get their eye in.
He had a great second half last year, but the theme was similar to what we're seeing now in the first half last year, where he was falling behind on counts quite a bit, always down 0-1, 0-2. So I'm cautiously optimistic. I don't think we're going to get October Kike by any means. I don't think that that's going to happen. But real quick, though, he's wearing glasses. Do you guys notice that? I didn't notice it until tonight.
He is.
Someone pointed that out. I forget who it was. I think it was on Twitter. Someone mentioned it, and I had to do a double take. Like, wait a minute, his pants are different too. Huh. Like he's changed up a couple things.
They did ask him about that. Supposedly, the glasses work better than contacts in certain situations. A lot of guys in the big leagues wear contacts. That doesn't concern me. What I do want to note is the Red Sox score when Kike gets on base. It makes sense to keep him at the top of the order because every time he gets on base, he scores. They bring him home. He just needs to be better. It'll happen with time.
And with the glasses thing, I wonder if it's more of a night game thing, perhaps. I didn't notice them
previously. I think it might be a reflection of all the lights.
Okay. Yeah.
It can sometimes give you some serious glare.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's probably not going to factor into anything anyway, but... Job, go ahead. Number one on your shit list.
Well, number one on my list is going to be Alex Cora. I think he made some serious mistakes in how he managed the starting rotation this week. That being said, I thought he did a good job managing the bullpen, but he went to them just a little bit too late. I do think that a lot of people are giving him crap for leaving Whitlock in there in game one. That is the one point that I actually agree with him on that. You let Whitlock ride until he gets into trouble. He's your best pitcher, period, in the bullpen. And he gave up a solo shot. It's not like he was getting knocked around and all of a sudden the wheels came off and he wasn't ready with a backup option. So I agree with that, but he should have taken Pivetta out. I thought one hitter earlier – Judge absolutely rocked that baseball in game two, sixth inning. I'm at the game. I'm watching. You can hear the bat, and the bat sounds different. The two foul balls that Judge hit and then the line drive to right field that ended up being a double. You should have gone with a right-handed pitcher there. I know they wanted to avoid doing that so that they could get a lefty-lefty matchup with Gallo. So Pivetta was probably done after Stanton anyway. But Stanton kills the Red Sox. I mean, he's not a great player for how much they pay him and how few games he plays. Not anymore anyway. But he kills us every time we play him. Unless he thinks it's gone and it's a single. It's upsetting that I think if you go to a different guy there, you probably win game two or at least are in the driver's seat. You know, you got a game tied at two. Severino's out of the game. They burned all their bullpen arms in game one. You're in a higher leverage position. I thought that might have cost us game one. Or game two, rather.
Yeah.
Pivetta was completely gassed before coming out into that sixth inning. And, I mean, his fastball was down to 92, 93 miles an hour. And I felt like he had already gotten away with a few that very easily could have went over the fence. So it didn't make much sense to me to bring him out. I probably would have, based on especially what we saw tonight, perhaps brought out Cutter Crawford, tried to go a couple of innings with him and patchwork the rest of the game together. But Pivetta had absolutely nothing left. And I just didn't see the point in taking him out again. I mean, Cora kind of lost that game. And Job, you bring up the Whitlock thing. That wasn't a terrible pitch. It was up at the, it was in the middle of the zone, but it was up high. It was like right. It was like middle high and it was a 96 mile an hour pitch and LeMahieu just crushed it. So,
hey, I mean, he flicked it, right? It's the thing is about Yankee Stadium. And I know they say this and they talk about the short right field porch, but when you go and you're sitting there, you really are looking at it like I could hit the ball out there. Like I'm no Major League Baseball player. But in batting practice, I could hit the ball over that right field fence. It is like playing a little league field. Both home runs that were given up in game one were home runs in exactly one ballpark. And I'm not going to be that guy who's going to say, oh, well, it's a fake win because they have the short porch. Like, we play at Fenway. We got ladders and corners and all kinds of crap. And I love it. That's what makes baseball unique. We're not a soccer field. We're not a football field. Every stadium is different. That's what makes it fun to an extent. But I also think you got to manage expectations of this team in the fan base. No, Cora didn't leave Whitlock in because he's worried about the bullpen in game one. He left Whitlock in because he's the best pitcher on the team. You need your best players against the best players. In a tie game, you leave him in until he's gassed.
Yeah, absolutely. And the big news of today, before the game even got going, Whitlock gets an extension. Well, kind of an extension. His arbitration gets bought up. He's making... he got $1 million signing bonus this year. He's making a little over $3 million the second year. Third year, he gets $5 million. And then the last year of his arbitration, he'll get paid $7 million. That goes through 2026. But then the Red Sox have two option years, team options that the Red Sox can pick up for, I think, $7 million in 27. And then $8 million in the final year. There's buyouts and other confusing details.
There's a $1 million buyout for those option years.
Yeah, so
decline his option. It costs $1 million. Not that they'll do that. That's a big win for the Red Sox. I'm not going to lie. That might be bigger than the game. Because if at any point they want to convert him to a starter, and he can do it, and he doesn't pull a Daniel Bard on us, he might be one of the best starters in the big leagues for under $10 million. I mean, that is unheard of. And the Red Sox can't develop pitching. So you can't get cheap young pitching. So it's a big difference between what we usually have to pay and what we're going to pay now. Great move by Heimblum today.
And those, if both option years are picked up, that takes him through his age 32 season. So if you want him beyond even that, he shouldn't be in line at age 32 for a massive deal. This is going to be a guy who's going to be probably controllable for as long as the Red Sox want him on the staff. So it's an absolute steal for the Red Sox. There also is some escalators on the option years. I think it's $2.5 million per year, and that's based on the number of innings pitched prior to those option years. So basically, it looks like they are planning on him being a starting pitcher at some point going forward. So, Charlie, what are your thoughts on those developments?
So, I was really pumped about Garrett Whitlock getting re-signed because I think that was the biggest bit in this series. If you're a Red Sox fan, because we've had a couple of ugly games, we end up pulling one out. I'm happy that we're able to take one away because we've led in all these games and we've slowly choked them away. The Pivetta thing was interesting because he was getting gassed. I felt that as soon as he walked Judge in the sixth inning, that should have been the trigger to pull him out. He fell in love with two pitches. So if you're sitting slider, fastball, because that's really all he was throwing, at least from what I remember, it felt like it was like 1-1, 1-1, or 2-1, 2-0. And it was just like, okay, you just have to sit one or the other. There's only a couple miles difference, a little bit of slide. But Stanton was waiting for slider, and that thing came right across. And as soon as that left the bat, no one had to turn their head. It was gone. And Hauk, what's alarming about that one is we got to do better. I mean, it stinks that we couldn't get enough runs for Nasty Nate. It's really disappointing that we couldn't get a little bit more for Pivetta. But the third one was a little bit alarming too. Tanner Houck has got to go five innings. I mean, I respect that we try to get six out of Pivetta because let's be honest, the Red Sox, the pitching staff, the rotation, if you got four innings, that was considered adequate. And we need to make that get a little bit longer now. So 5+ on a consistent basis, that's not going to do it. You need 6 innings out of your starters on a regular basis. So I understand why they tried to get 6 out of Pivetta. Unfortunately, it just didn't work out. It was close, but it wasn't there. And Hauk is, it's not there yet. It will be, but it's not there yet. That's, you know, I understand
why. Well, what's concerning, Charlie, what was really concerning about Hauk was his pitch mix. I mean, the one thing we talked
about pretty at all
last season was he needs that third pitch.
Right.
And he just didn't trust it tonight.
Well, I mean, Pivetta was falling in love with fastball slider. It's two pitches. You're not really trying to trick or fool opposing players if you're throwing one of two pitches. 50% chance of getting it right. So you need to
I'll take those odds.
You take those odds as a hitter. But if you're a pitcher, you should be praying to God because you cannot live on those. There were too many situations where what does he throw? He throws Hauk is fastball sinker.
I think fastball sinker slider change.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing the change too much. It was
I think we saw two change ups and 5 sinkers.
Yeah, it was super fastball heavy. It was super fastball heavy.
He had, I think, 22 fastballs and the rest were sliders.
The sinker was, it looked to me like it was like 50-50, whether it was locating or not, or getting the swings. But so he's going to have to develop that or figure out another third pitch. The one thing I will say is some of these guys might have been battling the elements a little bit. I mean, the feels like temperature tonight was 37. So hopefully they'll kind of get it together as they, you know, make more starts here in the coming days and weeks. But Hauk is, I mean, despite that, he still looks like a guy who's searching for it. And
I think he's the guy that you go to for 3 innings. All right, similar to what Whitlock gave you last season, that's who Tanner Hauk is at this point, right? Until he gets that third pitch, the feel down and comfortable, that's who he is. And unfortunately, with injuries and the confidence in the staff, Hauk's going to be your number 4. Maybe your number 5, however you want to phrase it or set it up. And I think when Sale gets back in July, it will be July, like I said in our show 3 weeks ago, and everyone's like, oh, no, he'll be back in a couple of weeks. He's already healed. No. He'll be back in July, middle of July. When Chris Sale gets back, if, big if here, there are 4 other healthy starters, Hauk is the guy you move to the bullpen. Hauk and Whitlock will piggyback off Rich Hale and Michael Wacha and shorten those games considerably. Until that point, you need him to go 3 times through the order. He needs to get 5 innings. And it's going to be a little bit rocky here, I think, until he finds that third pitch.
And the Yankees could have easily been up by 6 runs by the time he came out. It was just that ugly. And he just had some Houdini acts. And he got charged with a couple more runs that ultimately scored, I think, when Crawford came in. Or the next, I might have them mixed up. But whoever came in to relieve him ended up giving up some runs that were put on base by Hauk. So just not a very encouraging outing. So we'll see. Whitlock looked good.
He did make pitches when he needed to. I mean, he induced 2 ground ball double plays in big moments. He did have a big strikeout with guys on first and second, nobody out.
Well, actually, all 3 of his strikeouts tonight were to Josh Donaldson, which is unbelievable. 3 walks, 3 strikeouts. He got him every time. And someone else struck out Donaldson too. Just wasn't his night either, apparently. But yeah, we'll see. The better Whitlock starts to look in multi-inning appearances, the propaganda is going to start raging. Switch him and Hauk. Switch their roles. Put Whitlock in the rotation. Put Hauk in the pen. I think organizationally, we need Houck to work out in the rotation, but I just don't know. You can't force it. After a while, you just can't force it. So it's going to be an interesting month, and you know, the schedule is pretty tough, as we've pointed out. So here's a this is a Yankees shit list appearance. Garrett Cole, aka Kermit the Frog, because if you follow social media, he sounds a lot like Kermit when he's in front of a microphone. What a diva this guy is. He's got the opening day start at Yankee Stadium. There's gonna be ceremonies because it's opening day, and presentations and festivities. And he was scheduled to pitch at 1:08, but because he didn't go out until 1:12 p.m., 4 minutes later, he was in the dugout having a meltdown, which you can find on social media, probably even YouTube. Like, this guy just needs to get over himself. He's not bigger than the game. It's not all about Garrett Cole. And Red Sox tuned him up early. Devers got to him on the first pitch, hit a... it was a 99-mile-an-hour fastball above the zone. It wouldn't have even been a strike. Devers crushes it. And Bogart strung together some hits. I think JD got a hit off of Cole. So the dude's a diva, and I just hope this guy just gets crushed every time by the Red Sox. I just hope we get into his head and take care of business against him, because I can't stand him. I'm almost thankful that he didn't end up in Boston. I'm convinced I probably wouldn't be a Garrett Cole guy. Job.
He would be David Price. If you were in Boston, you would think of him the way you think of David Price.
I almost went there, but Price is just...
The guy is so mentally soft.
He is.
If you think about some of the pitchers that we've had in even somewhat recent Red Sox history, if you go to Pedro, Schilling, Beckett, the big guys. The guys who, and I don't want to compare Pedro, obviously, to Cole as far as talent, but the guys who are supposed to be your number ones, they have to be able to go into a big game and be nails and quiet that crowd. Garrett Cole went in last October, October 5th, was at that game, and absolutely crapped his pants. Because the Red Sox fans were chanting his name and his mom's name and ruining his night. And he let it get to him, and he gave up 6 runs in 2 1/3 innings. Now this happens. 4-minute delay because the microphone didn't work for the national anthem. There are bigger things than you getting on the bump on time, Garrett. I'm sorry. What happens when during a rain delay? I love it. I love it. I think teams are going to notice this. Step out of the box a little extra. Take an extra second when you're getting in, you know, digging in against this guy. Talk a little crap. Get in his head. The fans at the Rogers Center in Toronto, the Rogers Center this weekend was electric. I watched a couple of those games as well. There's no way that Garrett Cole is going to be successful against the AL East. I mean, he'll be successful in Tampa. There's no fans of the Tampa Bay Rays until October. But in Toronto, against the Red Sox, when they have to play Houston or L.A., they are screwed when Garrett Cole's on the bump.
So I think he's just – he's such a puss. Like, literally, we're talking about 4 minutes. I mean, you petulant child. This is pathetic. Like, I remember when Terry and I went to see the Red Sox and the Yankees. It was Red Sox-Yankees September – oh, God, was it 26th? Nate Eovaldi against, I think it was Garrett Cole.
It was
ace against ace. And we had how many technical malfunctions? We had lights not working. The national anthem kept cutting out. The little kid who said play ball, no one heard him say that. Can you imagine a player in the Boston Red Sox going, me, 4 minutes? What? Dude, you're getting paid $36 million a year on the average. And you're supposed to be setting an example for those guys that are getting paid. And you pull that? holy crap. The fact that you didn't get shellacked in your first inning, the baseball gods must have like a little bit of love for you.
I mean, he did get shellacked.
Three runs, yeah.
Three runs, that's not shellacking. Like, I'm talking about seven, something pretty. Like, you throw up a six on that frame just to, like, send a message. Three runs, no. That was, like, the baseball god saying, we heard you. But Gerrit Cole, he frustrates me to no end. This is somebody who, you know, a couple years ago was regarded as, some regard him as the best pitcher in all of baseball. My, oh, my, how the mighty have fallen. The strikeouts are down, ERAs, whatever. It's just, it's sad. He's not at all what we thought he was going to do without Spider Tack. He's not elite. He's very good, but he's not the best pitcher in the game.
He's getting paid like he should be the best pitcher in the game. He's getting paid to handle the big moment. Opening day is as big a moment as the Yankees are going to get this year. They're not making the playoffs. And he couldn't do it. And I love that. I can't believe they're locked in paying this guy for another couple of seasons.
Yeah, more than that.
He's going to come to Boston and get chirped.
Yeah. More people are going to bring their Kermit stuffed dolls. It's going to be great.
Other teams and crews, grounds crews are going to be slower. Other teams are going to step out of the box, get in his head. This guy, he's just mentally frail. He just can't hang. And I am here for it. It's going to be a lot of fun. I do want to mention one more thing about game three. That's not a shitless moment. Just because it's in front of me right now is breaking news from Ian Brown, MLB.com. He's asking right now, Jake Diekman in the clubhouse, do you want to be the closer? And his response, and I'm sorry for the vulgarity here, is I don't give two shits.
That's a good attitude. That's what I want to hear.
Quote. They asked if they can quote him on that, and he said, I don't care. That is what I want to hear from a guy, right? I don't care what my role is. I want to kick ass, and I want to strike out Yankees. Like, if we can get this team to be likable the way the 2021 team was likable, sign me up. We're going to have a really, really fun year, even when we're losing more games than I would like. The one last thing I want to say that's not necessarily going to go over too well with a lot of people, I saw stuff today on Twitter about all the negative Trevor Story heat. Trevor Story does not deserve to be taking heat right now. I get it. 1-for-10, tough start to the season. But he doesn't deserve that. He didn't get spring training. I know Charlie's thinking all about this. Go ahead, Charlie.
It's been three games. That's like people chirping about like Corbin Burns getting his like clock cleaned. One game, guys. Pay attention. Last time I checked, y'all, there was 162 games, not just three. So everyone needs to sit back, relax, go have a Mai Tai, shut the hell up. There's 160 games left. Relax. We have not seen the real Trevor Story yet.
It might take him a little while to get going, though, because, like you said, spring training, he was out of today's lineup with a stomach bug. That's probably a 2 or 3 day recovery, regardless of whether he gets in the lineup or not. He was 1-for-8 on the series, and I will say this. He was lucky to get that hit because Joey Gallo apparently, you know, misplayed it, dove for it. And but, you know, it was a hit nonetheless. Only struck out twice, drew a walk. So his plate appearances really aren't terrible. But just kind of scuffled a little bit in his opening series. So, all right. Why don't we just kick it over to the Detroit series preview here? This is going to be an interesting series because we don't have, Nathan Eovaldi will pitch, so he is one of our better starters. But, so let's go through the matchups right now. So on Monday, today, for most of you guys listening to this, 5:10 start Eastern, Michael Wacha versus Matt Manning. That's a crapshoot game. Michael Wacha didn't look super great in spring training. Not a high strikeout guy. So luckily, Comerica Park, not typically a place you have to worry about balls flying over the fence like you were just seeing at Yankee Stadium. But they're playing, they're pitching against Matt Manning, who is...
He sucks.
Hasn't been great. And a small sample size has not been great. So, I mean, it's just whoever sucks the least, I think, is going to come away with this.
We can say he sucks. He's had some crap months, but he totally pieced Chicago the last time he played. I'm curious to see what happens because I was looking him up because I don't remember him being relevant. He only had a couple games of relevance, a lot more games of oops, probably shouldn't have pitched as long as he did. He's gotten tuned a couple of times, but he's had his last performance in 2021 was not one to just say whatever to. So if he brings that back, we're going to be in for some. Wacha, good God. This one's going to be interesting.
This is going to be fun.
I know you do. I know you do.
This team is going to go as far as the offense takes it. That has been what I've been saying the entire offseason. I still believe that now. This is going to be a 10-8 ball game. Fun to watch. A lot of offense. I don't like a 5-10 start time. But it's the little things, right? At least there's baseball.
So Manning's never faced the Red Sox. He was a rookie last year, made his debut in June against the Angels. So we had already played Detroit at least once, and if we played them after that, he just didn't get a turn through the rotation. I will say this, though. Last year, one of the themes of the season, especially in the second half when we scuffled quite a bit, whenever we were facing a pitcher that I thought we were going to tune up, like an Andrew Heaney type guy, we were a complete no-show. So that can't happen here. And Detroit arguably is one of the easier teams that we're going to face. They're 1-2 just like us. They had a tough series against Chicago. That's a team with tons of firepower, similar to the Yankees and Blue Jays, kind of a murderer's row most of the way through that lineup. So that's who they faced. And if we get out to an early lead, we need to keep the pedal to the metal and just continue to string those hits and runs throughout this series. But game two, Rich Hill versus Tyler Alexander. Admittedly, I'm not that familiar with Alexander. So we're obviously hoping for a good outing from Hill, who did look good in spring training. But Joe, what are your thoughts on that matchup?
Well, I actually think this is the hardest matchup of the series for Boston. Alexander's pretty good. I'm going to read some of his numbers right now that I have in front of me. He only pitched 106 innings in 2021, but he had a 3.8 ERA and his whip, very impressive, 1.2. He doesn't walk a lot of guys. He's around the strike zone. He throws gas. I just don't know necessarily that anybody scares me if the offense can get going. I'm going to start getting concerned in about 2 weeks if the offense hasn't gotten going. But it would be nice to take two out of three, and I worry about this game in particular out of the three games. I wish we were seeing Eddie Rodriguez, though.
We are seeing.
Yeah, we are
in game three.
That's the toughest matchup.
He's facing Eovaldi.
Yeah,
that's actually going to be the I think for memory's point, I think that's going to be hard to see him play for the very first time in a not Orioles or Red Sox uniform, because this is a guy who we got originally. I think Erod came over in the that reliever, the lefty,
Andrew Miller.
Andrew Miller, thank you. Yeah, him. That was that deal. This is going to be interesting, to say the least. Erod did not have a very good first game. Just didn't really have it. He played against Chicago, which is the team that all of us picked to win, except for, I think, Terry, which was Detroit, yeah. If I'm not mistaken.
That's what I said. So
that's going to be interesting. I still think we'll have the edge in this game. I'd like to believe that we're going to take two out of three. I don't feel very good about game two. I don't feel great about game one, but it could go either way. Game three, I actually am very confident that the Red Sox will win. Best case scenario, we're 3-3. Worst case scenario, we're 2-4 after the second series.
I didn't like E-Rod's earrings. They were really dangly this last time. I meant to get everyone's take on social media about that. But, yeah, he lasted 4 innings in that start, gave up 3 runs, walked 2, struck out 2. We certainly seen worse than that when he was with us. So probably not his worst outing. But he's a guy, if he's not on, he can get the pitch count up real fast and be around 80 pitches in the fourth inning or so. So hopefully we'll grind out some at-bats and stuff with E-Rod in game three. I hope to see one thing. We're probably not going to see it, but I will laugh so hard if he has a decent outing and then somewhere in there he has a 1-2-3 inning, looks at Alex Cora and points at his wrist. So it's my time.
You know what I would love to see? This is selfish and a wrong way to win. I hope it's a close game. And his star shortstop that he wanted defense behind him, and that's why he went to Detroit for less money than he would have got elsewhere. I hope somebody on his team costs him the game with an error. I hope there's a 2-run error, and the Red Sox win by 2, and Cora points at his watch. Like, feed me all of that narrative. I love it. Or Xander, you know? Xander's been chirped all season for his defense the last couple of years. It's almost like people want to remind themselves that Xander's not a shortstop so they don't have to pay him like a shortstop. He's still a good player. He makes the good plays. And Eddie wanted to go play for a different shortstop. There's going to be some issues there. I bet you Xander takes him deep.
Charlie, go ahead.
Yeah, so I actually hope that neither Alex Cora or Eddie Rodriguez do that little watch BS, because as fun as and as cute as it was the first time, it would not be so this time around. I think we need to let bygones be bygones, let the boys play, the coaches coach. I don't want to see either one get tuned. I actually do hope that E-Rod has a really good game. I hope that Nate Eovaldi has a better one. I hope that they both go 6+. I hope E-Rod does what he was, you know, expecting to do this year, and I hope Nasty Nate does what we expect him to do every game. So I expect it to actually be the closest game. 2-run ball game would be a blessing, but I think it's going to be, you know, I really do think it's going to be a Red Sox win by 1 or 2 runs. That's it.
It was a low-scoring series for sure. I'm going to say 2 out of 3 for the Red Sox. I feel like that's the safe answer. If they're going to get a sweep, we're going to have to, in my opinion, get a good game from Michael Wacha. I'm less worried than Job is, perhaps, in game two. You know, Tyler Anderson's been around a while, you know, 5 or 6 years. He's got a mid, I don't know, a 4.60-something ERA, kind of Martin Perez-type numbers. I'm not saying he's got that type of stuff, but he's certainly been knocked around throughout his career. And if Hill's got something in the tank, you know, that should be a winnable game. And I hope so bad. I want Rich Hill to be like the darling of MLB this year and to be a great story at 42. So we'll see.
Terry, there's hope for you yet. He's 42. You can still get out there and pitch. Somebody will give him a deal. Maybe the Savannah Bananas up there in Georgia. Take a short trip over there and play for them. But I think they're going to sweep this series. I really do. The bats are going to wake up. Trevor Story is going to get his first extra base hit in this series. That wins us a game. There's going to be some magic on this team. It's going to start pretty soon here. I just feel really good about the offense against Detroit. I really think Detroit is an overrated pitching staff. They don't have a lot of relievers. Their numbers are saved by Comerica. And I'm excited to watch this series. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, it's two of the three games, and it's the latter two. Games 2 and 3 will be 1:10 Eastern games. So I think I'm about to start work here pretty quick, so I don't know if I'll be able to see those. I'll be able to see tomorrow's, but that is a 5:10 start anyway. But all right, well, I guess we will wrap on that. Join us tomorrow for Hot Take Tuesday, which were hot takes submitted by our followers on social media. So we're going to react to what they have to say. So stay tuned for that. And then we'll be back on, for the audience, we'll be back on Thursday to talk about what did happen in this Detroit series. Everyone have a good start to your week. Take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.